Andrew said they talked about the Queen in class today, Dad.
Oh, yes. And what did you learn about the Queen, Andrew?
She wears nice hats. And she's the Queen of the Commonwealth and the Queen of Australia.
And she's seen as a figure in the Church of England.
That's what Miss Taylor, our teacher, said. Except no one reckons it's important to us anymore because we're Australian.
Well, at least the media and the politicians seem to want us to think it's not important.
But it's very important.
Why is that?
Yeah, I mean, the church, the Queen and the politicians, well, they don't really have anything to do with each other in Australia anymore, do they?
Oh, yes, they do. It's just that the politicians want us to think they don't. You see, politicians and police, judges, magistrates and people like that, they all take an oath to be loyal to the Queen, and the Queen takes an oath to serve God. So it's pretty plain that they're all connected. You see, it all stems from an oath the Queen took at the coronation. You've heard about the coronation, Andrew.
Oh, yeah. Miss Taylor told us how Princess Elizabeth was crowned the new Queen after the death of the King, who was her father.
That's about right, Andrew. The coronation is based on Christian symbols and values. You see, any system of law and government will have as their basis their religion. Take some Middle Eastern countries, for instance, Saudi Arabia. Now, their system of government and law is based on their religion, which is Islam. Some other countries, like India, they have their laws based on their religion, which is Hindu or Buddhism. Australia's political system is based on 2,000 years of Christianity. You might not realise it, but our whole system of law, government, culture, tradition, all have a Christian basis.
Did you go to the coronation of the Queen, Grandpa?
Oh, no. But I was in England at the time and I watched it on television like millions of other people. It was and still is a very important part of our history. Would you like to learn more about the coronation, Andrew?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. While Mum gets a cup of tea, I'll go and get a couple of books I've been reading. They're all about the coronation and very interesting.
Okay.
Now, by learning what occurs at a coronation, we can see from an historical point of view exactly how Christian morals and symbols are embedded into the way our government and laws are formed. Imagine you're in a time travel machine.
Cool!
On the 2nd of June, 1953, a young woman, 27 years of age, Elizabeth of the House of Windsor, was crowned Queen of Australia. At the same time, she was crowned Queen of the United Kingdom, Canada, New Zealand, and many other places within the Commonwealth. People thronged the route to see the processions, but millions more watched on the new invention of television. For the first time in history, many more people could watch the grandeur of the coronation on television as it was happening. It was an occasion marked by great pageantry, pomp and ceremony. Magnificent costumes, a great procession of soldiers, sailors, airmen and bands from all over the Commonwealth. At the heart of the coronation was a moving Christian ceremony in Westminster Abbey in London, a magnificent cathedral built 700 years ago. It is a service that dates back virtually unchanged for over 1,000 years. Ever since the Norman conquest of England in 1066, the coronation of a king or queen has been a Christian service presided over by the Archbishop of Canterbury. At the very beginning of the ceremony, the Queen is presented to the people.
Sirs, I here present unto you Queen Elizabeth, your undoubted Queen. Wherefore, all you who are come this day to do your homage and service, are you willing to do the same?
Oh, sir.
We refer to the Queen as the sovereign, that is, the one who has supreme power and dominion. However, during the coronation, the Queen acknowledges only God is sovereign and herself as the servant of God.
Will you solemnly promise and swear to govern the people of the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, the Union of South Africa, Pakistan and Ceylon, and of your possessions and the other territories to any of them belonging or pertaining, according to their respective laws and customs?
I solemnly promise so to do.
Will you, to your power, cause law and justice in mercy to be executed in all your judgments?
I will.
Will you, to the utmost of your power, maintain the laws of God and the true profession of the gospel?
The things which I have here before promised, I will perform and keep, so help me God.
And so right from the outset, the Queen undertook to maintain the laws of God and the true profession of the gospel in mercy. And the laws of God to which she refers are summarized in the Ten Commandments. The Ten Commandments were dictated by God to Moses on Mount Sinai 3,500 years ago. And Jesus further summarized them by two commandments, to love God and love your fellow men as we love ourselves. So our Queen acknowledged that there is a higher law to which she and the whole nation are bound. And this law has been the foundation of all our laws. The Ten Commandments tells us how we should treat one another. They outline the importance of sanctity of marriage and of the family unit, just like your family, Andrew. They establish the importance of private property and of truthfulness and honesty in our communications and business affairs. They are our Maker's instructions and are supposed to form the basis of laws drawn up by modern governments. These laws are the rules by which our society is expected to function and behave. Even the Australian Constitution, that important document which sets out the rules under which our parliaments and people can operate, starts by saying the federal commonwealth is formed by the people humbly relying on the blessings of Almighty God. And so we can begin to see just how the Queen, Christianity, and the laws and constitutions that govern Australia are so closely interwoven. Once the Queen had made the commitment to maintain the laws of God, she was then given a copy of the Christian Bible and addressed by the Archbishop and Moderator of the Church of Scotland.
Our gracious Queen, to keep Your Majesty ever mindful of the law and the gospel of God as the rule for the whole life and government of Christian princes, we present you with this book, the most valuable thing which the world affords.
Here is wisdom, this is the royal law, these are the lively oracles of God.
And so we see that the Bible is to be the rule for the whole of the life of the Queen, and in turn the people she represents. The whole system of common law and our rights and freedoms as subjects stems from the Bible. The modern-day legal rights in Australia, to be considered innocent until proven guilty, the right to face an accuser in open court, and the right to a fair trial, all come from the Bible. Today, in some countries, without Christian-based laws, you can be arrested and considered guilty, even without a trial. Fortunately for us, the wise King Alfred made the Ten Commandments the basis of the law of England over 1,000 years ago, to ensure that Christian morals prevailed. Now, while a canopy of gold was held over the Queen, she was anointed with oil and consecrated to God by a prayer that the Holy Spirit give her the wisdom, knowledge, and godliness to govern. Oil is poured from the beak of the golden eagle of the Ampulla into the coronation spoon and is applied to the new Queen's head, breast, and palms. The spoon dates from the 12th century, and the bird's head of the Ampulla was first used for the coronation of Henry IV in 1399. These are the oldest parts of the coronation regalia, since the rest were destroyed in the Cromwellian Revolution over 300 years ago. Throughout the ceremony, different items of regalia are presented to the Queen. Each is to represent various important commitments she is to make to God and her people. The first of these is the jewelled sword of state, made for King George IV and featuring a scabbard of gold, diamonds, emeralds and rubies. After being clothed in a robe of gold thread, the Queen was handed the jewelled sword of state.
Receive this kingly sword, brought now from the altar of God, and delivered to you by the hands of us, the bishops and servants of God, though unworthy. With this sword, do justice, stop the growth of iniquity, protect the holy church of God, help and defend widows and orphans.
So we see that the authority to maintain the laws of God is given to the civil power, the Queen and her governments of the Commonwealth, by the Church. Next, the Queen received the bracelets.
Receive the bracelets of sincerity and wisdom, both as tokens of the Lord's protection, embracing you on every side, and as symbols and pledges of the bond that unites you with your people.
The imperial robe of gold and crimson thread was then put on the Queen.
The Lord clothe you with the robe of righteousness and with the garments of salvation.
The Queen is then given the golden orb. The orb has a cross on top. This symbolizes the whole world is under Christ's dominion.
Receive this orb set under the cross and remember that the whole world is subject to the power and empire of Christ our Redeemer.
And so with this symbolism, the Queen is never to forget that she is the servant of the true sovereign, God himself. The coronation ring is a sapphire with a cross of St. George set on it in rubies, originally made for the coronation of William IV in 1830. The Queen receives the ring on the third finger of her right hand to consecrate her as our head and prince and defender of Christ's religion. The royal scepter with a cross on top contains a magnificent 530-carat diamond, which was presented by the Transvaal colony to King Edward VI. The Queen then received the royal scepter and the rod of mercy.
Receive the royal scepter, the ensign of kingly power and justice. Receive the rod of equity and mercy. Be so merciful that you be not too remiss. So execute justice that you forget not mercy.
The crown is known as the crown of St. Edward and is only used for a coronation. It is a gold crown with an orb and a cross at the top, which was made especially for the coronation of Charles II in 1661. The gold of the crown is thought to have been formed using parts of the crown of King Edward the Confessor, who later became St. Edward, hence the name St. Edward's Crown. As the crown was placed on her head by the Archbishop, all the princes, princesses, and peers and peeresses put on their coronets and caps and shouted,
Thank you.
crown you with a crown of glory and righteousness. That having a right
the actual crowning of Queen Elizabeth took place with the Queen seated in the ancient coronation chair of King Edward II, which was built to contain the Stone of Scone. This was the coronation stone of ancient Scottish kings, which King Edward I had carried away from Scotland in 1296. The Queen then went to her own throne, which was on a raised dais. Then representatives of the church, princes and peers, did their homage to the Queen. First the Archbishop, representing all the bishops, knelt before her. Then her husband, Prince Philip, knelt before her.
I, Philip, to become your liege man of life and limb, and of earthly worship, in faith and truth I will bear unto you.
Similarly, representatives of each of the senior peers followed suit. Then the Queen took the bread and wine of the communion service, which reminded her that even Christ himself came to earth not to be served, but to serve and give his life for her on the cross. And when finally all was completed, our new monarch, Queen Elizabeth II, Queen of Australia, the United Kingdom, Canada, South Africa, and other places within the Commonwealth, went out to face the people. She went out holding the scepter in one hand and the orb in the other, symbolizing that she is God's servant to us to maintain God's law in equity, justice, and mercy. And now, amid cheering crowds, the Queen was escorted back to the palace with a magnificent parade made up of soldiers, sailors, airmen and police from all parts of the Commonwealth. And so you see, all of the coronation symbolised is very much interwoven and relevant to Australia's Christian-based system of law and government.
But how can one woman, living on the other side of the world, oversee all that?
Well, of course she can't, and it was never expected or intended that she could. The instrumentalities of state are there to do it all. The police, the judges, the soldiers, the bureaucrats, each take on an oath of allegiance to the Queen, and should therefore take on the responsibilities of the coronation oath. In fact, in a very real sense, she took that oath on behalf of all of us. However, the only direct role of the Queen in Australia is to appoint the Governor General to represent her in Australia. Although he's selected by the Prime Minister, he's accountable to the Queen, and he's able to be an impartial umpire to ensure the government obeys the law. Now, if he was appointed by Parliament, as the Republicans want, he wouldn't be an impartial umpire, but controlled by Parliament.
Wow, it's all a bit complicated, Grandpa.
Oh, my word, it is. But it's something all Australians should learn about. Our early Christian leaders were very wise and knew that no person or government should be trusted with too much power. The history of mankind has proved beyond doubt that power always brings with it corruption. That's why a king or a queen has a special role to limit power and to keep the different parts of government separate and functioning to the benefit of all. In the end, it's not so much the power the queen wields in Australia, but the power she denies others. That, Andrew, is the most important thing to remember. It's the power she denies others that will protect our freedom in the future.
But how is that relevant today? I mean, the whole system just seems to be falling apart. What was that I was reading the other day? Three teenagers let off the hook for bashing an 83-year-old grandmother. I mean, you read stuff like that all the time and it just seems to be getting worse. It's enough to make you sick. I don't know, the whole system just seems to be breaking down. You've got people out there who have no respect for anyone, let alone their property.
Well, that's because as a society, we've rejected everything the Coronation Service stands for and symbolises. Politicians no longer base the laws they make on the law of God, and in fact often pass laws which are completely opposed to God's law. And the media hasn't helped much either in making our society a happier place, as your mother just pointed out. It continually highlights anti-Christian values and morality and makes heroes out of those who have little respect for other people. We've all failed to pass on the knowledge of how we were once a happy and peaceful society, Andrew, living in much closer harmony with each other. Could you ever imagine your mother leaving her car unlocked in the middle of town while she goes shopping? Or letting you go for a spin around the block at night on your bike?
No way!
Well, we used to be able to do all that almost anywhere in Australia and feel very, very safe. Don't get me wrong, Australia's still a great country, but unfortunately it's being changed far too quickly by those who have got little concern for the future stability, happiness and well-being of its people. We all need to learn to live by some of the important messages that form the very foundation of the Coronation Service. We have the greatest system in the world, Andrew, but if we're not careful, we'll lose it, as have many other countries which once had the benefit of our system of government.